listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Show is flying by. Just like playoff overtime, Mark, right? Miller and Moulton here on the Florida Sports Network. Thanks so much for being with us. Our poll question is hockey related, so we know it's going to get 43 votes, but that's okay. We're willing to take the heat. Both Florida teams are down 1-0. Which one is in more trouble? I voted Lightning. Mark voted Panthers. Go to FL Sports Network, at that Mark Miller, at the David Moulton on Twitter, or floridasportsnetwork.com and vote. Speaking of the Panthers, David Dork covers them, Channel 10 in Miami. Also hosts Chirping the Cats. It's a Florida Panthers podcast. You can follow David on Twitter at David Dork, D-W-O-R-K. David, it's David and Mark. How you holding up this morning?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm a little tired, otherwise holding up okay.
All right. The Panthers had not, 39-0-1 when taking a lead into the third period. It's now 39-1-1, but that one's the most important. Why, in your estimation, did finally Washington do something that really only one other team could do all year long, and that's take a lead away from the Panthers in the third?
Well, they did a great job of mucking things up in the third period. The Panthers, I mean, they've been a team all year that kind of comes at you in waves, especially at home. But the Capitals did a good job of limiting Florida's opportunities on the rush. I thought that for a good part of the second half of that game, it was the pace was controlled by the Panthers as best they could, because the game just overall was a very slow, grindy game, which you wouldn't expect from the Panthers, especially at home ice. It'll be interesting to see if they can overcome that in game two. The execution was definitely off. The Panthers got plenty of chances. They got plenty of looks, you know, in high danger areas. They didn't necessarily challenge Vitek Vanacek, the Capitals goalie, that well. I thought they hit him with a lot of pucks more than he made a lot of big saves. So there's definitely some room for improvement, but it was an uncharacteristic home loss for the Panthers, no doubt. And I guess now that it's the playoffs, it's not, you know, 39-1-1. It's just 0-1-0 at this point, right? They're just 0-1 when winning after two periods. So, you know, a lot to build on for a President's Trophy winning team.
All right. How did they handle it? Because for as much as this group wants to be this group, you and a lot of others know what the Panthers' playoff history is. Haven't won a series in over 25 years. They've never won a series when they've lost game one. They were the best team in the regular season. They never lost when leading in the third period, etc. So how did this group handle losing 4-2?
I mean, they appeared to handle it just fine and take everything in stride. Like, you know, they said all the right things after the game, that, you know, there's no panic in the locker room. We're very positive. You know, it's just one game. But we're not really going to know for sure how they respond until tomorrow night when they go out for game two. If they go out there and do gangbusters the way they have all year and they put up another four or five goals and they get back on track, then it's like, yeah, okay, it was just one game. But if we go on game two and we see another game where they've got, you know, 20 shots through two periods, which is very uncharacteristic of any Panthers team this year, there'll be a little bit of a cause for concern. So for the time being, you know, they're doing everything, they're saying everything right. You know, we'll be at practice in a few hours at the rink. And I'm sure, you know, be high spirited, probably a little bit more focused, and maybe a little bit less fun, just, you know, obviously because of what happened. But we're really going to find out on Thursday night, like, just how this team responds.
You know, it was a game, and I know the shots weren't there. It seemed that for large portions, however, Florida controlled the puck. They do what they always do. They had a lot of puck possession. What was it about Washington's defense that didn't allow them to get to the net the way they normally do?
I don't even know if it was about Washington's defense, because, like, as you said, they were generating opportunities. They had the puck possession for maybe not as much as normal, but they certainly did generate a lot of chances. I think that the execution below the circles was a little off. There was plenty of times where they'd have the puck right around the goal crease, but couldn't quite get the shot off, couldn't quite make a play. There was a couple of times where they were trying to make some fancy passes, you know, cross-slot passes. It just, you know, didn't click for whatever reason. I don't think that had a lot to do with the Washington Capitals, what they were doing down low. I think it was just maybe the Panthers collectively were gripping their sticks a little too tight, or, you know, just sometimes the puck luck doesn't go your way. That's why I'm just very anxious to see how game plays out. But, you know, for a team that was so good all season in the offensive zone, that, you know, really dominated puck possession a lot of the time, it was a little unexpected to see them struggle the way they did.
Talking Florida Panthers with David Dwork, Channel 10 in Fort Lauderdale, Miami, and he hosts Chirping the Cats. It's a Florida Panthers podcast. Follow David on Twitter, David Dwork, D-W-O-R-K. All right, coming in, big question, you know, Bob, would he be good enough? Sergei Bobrovsky, for those of you that don't know, he's the Panthers' number one. They spent big bucks, 3 years ago now to bring him in. I thought he was fine. The first goal, but I thought he was making big saves on, you know, high caliber scoring chances throughout the second period and into the early third, and then a breakaway and a 2-on-1, and he doesn't stop either. But I thought, David, if Bob plays like this the rest of the series, I think the team would take it. Yes? No?
I completely agree with you. I think Bob was excellent in game one. Based on, you know, like as you said, he's been here for 3 years now. We're probably seeing the best out of him in, you know, over the last month or so than we've seen in those 3 years. And with Sergei Bobrovsky, you're going to get rebounds. His rebound control is not a good part of his game. We've known that for a long time now. Columbus was really good about cleaning up things in front of Sergei Bobrovsky, and that's why he did really well in Columbus. Last night, I thought the Panthers did a really good job of clearing out rebounds. Obviously, the first goal by Tom Wilson was a power play goal, so there's a bit more space, and it was, you know, like another rebound that just popped right out, and he put it right back behind Bob. But when Bob's making a lot more of the high danger saves, which he has been over the last 4 to 6 weeks, it kind of mitigates the, you know, the bad rebounds or the little cheap ones that'll sneak through. It's because he's kind of making up for it on the back end with a lot more big athletic saves. If he plays the way he plays in game one for the, you know, the 10-year Florida is in the playoffs, however long they're going to be there, I think they're going to be in good shape. I think not worrying about goaltending is a big key, especially after last year's series against Tampa where they played 3 goalies in 6 games. But that is one thing that coming out of game one, I had a big smile on my face about, and that was the effort of Sergei Bobrovsky. I thought it was playoff Bob. I thought it was the guy who was earning that contract that he signed, the $10 million per year contract. So hopefully that is something that the Panthers get moving forward. And I think they will, just based on the fact that he's been playing quite well over the last, like I said, about 6 weeks. The only time he struggled were the 2 games that he came in after, you know, he got hit in the face with a puck in Los Angeles when he was on the bench, and he didn't start that whole road trip. He was under the weather. He came back and he had the 2 bad starts against Jersey and Toronto, 2 games that the Panthers ended up making these ridiculous comebacks and winning anyway. But aside from those 2 starts, Bob's been probably the best that I've seen of him in his 3 years with the Panthers. And if that continues in the playoffs, then Panthers will probably be okay.
Do you think they respond?
Yes. I think this team, they've got so much veteran leadership in the locker room. There really does not appear to be any panic yet. I mean, you know, when, you know, things, the nitty gritty gets really crazy, if they go behind 2 games, then we'll see different characteristics than we've seen a lot of the season. You would think you go into a little bit of a panic mode. But I mean, when you got Patrick Hornquist and Radko Gudas, you've got guys that have been there before. You got Claude Giroux, you got Joe Thornton, Carter Verhaeghe, he's been, you know, won a Stanley Cup. Noah Chari's won a Stanley Cup. There's enough veterans in there that everything should stay pretty chill, and they can, you know, also kind of hang their hat on the, however, you know, whatever, it's 58 games or whatever that they won during the regular season. It's definitely not time to panic, and this team is so good that they shouldn't be. But again, if tomorrow night does not go their way, I don't want to say all bets are off, but it'll be interesting to see the situation behind the scenes after game two.
Oh, no, I think all bets would be off. David, thanks for your time and your insight. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, fellas. Take care.
David Dwork, Channel 10, Miami, Fort Lauderdale. Also hosts Chirping the Cats, a Florida Panthers podcast. Follow him on Twitter, David Dwork, D-W-O-R-K. You know, it's ironic. I mean, you and I both thought that Bob, you know, give him a B. And Giroux scores a goal for him, too.
Which he's not really done since coming over.
And yet they lose.
Right.
And had a lead going to the third.
Mm-hmm.
So the goalie plays pretty well.
Pretty well.
Giroux scores, and they have a lead going to the third. but they lost.
Maybe they need to be down 2-3-1 going to the third. They're awfully good when they're down a couple of goals going to the third period.
Nobody's been better trailing going into the third period than the Florida Panthers. That's for sure. So both the Lightning and the Panthers lost game one. Tampa on the road, Florida at home. Lightning try to even things up in Toronto tonight. We've had a few Lightning fans text in Twitch chat room. What do they need to do tonight? You and I both said the same thing. Show up. They were terrible in game one. Lousy. Played it like it was a Tuesday night in Ottawa. They were awful.
They were awful. They're playing the better team. And the Panthers played pretty well last night, but come up short. It is our poll question today. Both down 0-1. Which team's in bigger trouble? I voted Panthers. David voted Lightning. The audience, right now, 2/3 saying Panthers.
Still have faith in the 2-time defending Stanley Cup champion Lightning. I just think Lightning are playing the better team. That's why they're in more trouble. Canada Relief says that the Lightning should decline the Leafs' penalties. Man, their power play was lousy in game one and gave up a shorty also.
By the way, just a little football tease for you.
Uh-huh.
Armando Seguero from the Miami tweeting out that the Munich game date has been set. The Tampa Bay-Seattle game will be played 9:30 on November the 13th. Every once in a while, if I can just throw a football nugget at somebody.
Schedule released a week from tomorrow night.
Right. Leaks already starting to happen.
Well, and they did say that they're going to have strategic leaks.
And so, looks as if the Munich game is one of them, November 13th, 9:30 a.m., streaming in a market near you.
I think that game will go over very well. Because they've never been in Germany, I don't believe.
I think it'll be a lot like the early London games, that it will be mostly Americans that are living in Germany dying to see American football.
And think about it. They thought they were going to get to see Russell Wilson and Tom Brady had retired. And instead, they get to see Tom Brady and Russell Wilson's with Denver. Denver at Seattle this year. Don't know the date. But Russ goes back to the Pacific Northwest this year.
Sounds like a Monday night football game to me.
You know, it really does.
Thanks for listening. And now, more of Miller and Moulton on the Florida Sports Network.
Past the hour. Miller and Moulton, the Florida Sports Network. Our buddy Seth Everett will join us a little more than 15 minutes on the show, but a little more than 10 minutes on Twitch. And, well,
it is one of his holidays.
Right.
After all, it is May the 4th.
May the force be with you. That's what I did there. You had a scheduling tidbit before we went to break. There are more tidbits.
More tidbits?
There are more tidbits.
So, I love a good tidbit.
What's better, a nook and cranny or a tidbit?
A nook and a cranny. Because that gives a slight hint towards an English muffin. I did figure out, by the way, David, for those that have been listening for a while, I did look up a pumpernickel bread recipe. So it's coming.
Okay.
Very easy.
I need that, Mark. I've never tried that.
Never had pumpernickel?
No. I also still haven't done the fork trick with the English muffin.
I haven't either.
I'm folding.
And I don't know when I will. Like, I don't know if I'm going to
be... Will you buy an English muffin? Like, if you buy an English muffin, if you're on the road at one of the hotels you stay at and you walk down to the... And it would be a Saturday hotel, not a Monday hotel. Well, I don't know. Now that you're with ESPN, I don't know what the accommodations are. Fox!
Oh.
You were Ritz-Carlton, Four Seasons.
It was amazing.
They spared no expense with where they put you. A lot of inn and suites with the SEC.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of towns that end in Ville.
Right. So when you're in one of those Villes and you get up in the morning, they've got that complimentary
yes
breakfast. You may score an English muffin. Now, I don't know if it can be done with the plastic fork, and I'm waiting for your report on a Saturday in September.
Fayetteville, Gainesville, Starkville, College Station. Oh, yeah. A lot of fork potentials with the English
right.
muffin.
Just don't go back to Rockville.
So you would let everybody know that
the Munich game
is Seattle and Tampa.
November the 13th, 9:30 a.m. Eastern.
First ever game in Germany. They get Tom Brady.
Good get.
Yeah, really is. So the two London games, early October, Vikings-Saints. The following week, Giants-Packers.
In London?
Yeah. Yeah, Green Bay couldn't avoid it. They're on the list. Hey, Giants are going to be hard knocks here pretty soon, too. They've called in every chip, and, you know, yeah, they're going to be hard knocks here soon, unless they start winning. Tell you that. So those are the three games, and Arizona is one of the two opponents for the Mexico City game, apparently coming up maybe even before the show is done, that we're going to know who Arizona is playing in Mexico City.
So this was the calculated leak. They're going to get out all of the international games, which was a huge part of the draft coverage.
Yeah. I mean, all around the world.
If you don't think there's a game coming to Rio soon, you didn't watch the NFL draft.
That was quite the visual.
It was beautiful.
It was. The fog with the cross kind of being
right.
seen through the fog. Huge. I mean, they got it pretty close to that thing. So, and the third London game, by the way, because two of the games will be at Tottenham Hotspur. I just like doing that.
I know. I leave it alone.
Thank you. Thanks for giving me that little joy in my life. Please, Mark, I got all into the Chelsea-Everton match Sunday morning. It's the first time I took in a Premier League pregame game or match and post. A three-hour treatment. It was glorious. Just glorious. I was in the house alone by myself. I walked around doing Ian Dark for 3 hours.
Did you ever turn the volume down of the Premier League match so you were solo, or did you need that little bit of English accent in the background to help push you over the cliff?
I started with the volume on so that I could find
right.
my voice, but I had the closed captioning on, so I would then, about midway through...
Because glorious is a great word to do in an English accent. Magnificent, better. But well done.
I prefer my football in Espanol.
Okay.
Well, you should.
Fair enough.
It's amazing.
It's the native tongue.
It's amazing.
Fair enough.
The other day I discovered that I could switch my NBA broadcast to Spanish, and we watched the Suns-Mavericks game in Espanol.
Jay Crowder.
How is your Spanish?
Devin Booker.
Yeah, I got you. How is your Spanish? Is there any?
Subpar.
Is there any?
It's subpar. I'm the worst Spanish speaker in my family. I'm the runt.
Does your brother speak
bottom
Spanish?
Of the barrel. Yes, my brother's girlfriend is from Argentina, actually. So he speaks
Spanish. So he
yes.
does. So this is, you know, back to graduation this weekend with the grandparents coming in town and everything, who obviously the grandparents are fluent.
Oh, yes.
Is your older brother the favorite?
When it comes to Spanish, yeah.
Well, I mean.
They love me, though. They love me. They love them some Felipe.
Listen to him.
Listen to T.O. over there.
He
went T.O. about the grandparents.
They love me some Felipe. In other words, the baby. They love the baby of the family. So, all right.
Grandma probably even would accept that mustache, wouldn't she?
We're going to have to see. We're going to have to see.
Probably not. By the way, they announced one other game over at Wembley because, of course, I mean, the Jags haven't been brought up, and the Jags always play a London game. And they're playing Russell Wilson and the Broncos. So you're going to get Brady, Rodgers, and Russell Wilson across the pond this year.
Those are good gets.
Yeah. And Kyler Murray's playing somebody in Mexico City. We'll find out in a little bit. So there you have it. But getting back to channeling my by Ian Dark and other. I mean, it was, you know how it is, just how descriptive they are, just
yes.
how so over the top that this is just a half a notch below a religious experience is are these matches. Oh, it's a majestic scene. The bravery. I just love how descriptive they are. How Everton, you know, one of the worst teams facing relegation, taking on Chelsea and the 41,000 in attendance who can't bear their team falling by the wayside. They are inspiring them on to victory. He'll remember that goal for the rest of his life. Frank Lampard.
You just, at this point, Felipe, you just let him go. He doesn't need us anymore. You and I could continue yeah. on with an entire conversation for the rest of this segment.
Yeah.
And he would just jump in at any point that he wanted to.
I don't know how you listen to a first half and don't then want to perform it in the second half. I mean, honestly, it's like I was doing my own one-man play.
He's
in
right,
the second
though.
Half.
He's right, because every time I play FIFA, the video game, what's a ball by Rooney? Mohamed Salah.
We really got to work it. Stick to the Espanol. We got to work on that British accent. Way too fast.
Frank Lampard, the Chelsea legend.
Sadio Mane.
Having led them to so many triumphs over the years, and now he must take them down. So his club, who has never been relegated, will not have that fate.
Well, the relegation in and of itself leads to...
I love it. We don't have it.
No, we don't.
We wouldn't put up with it. The owners in this country would never put up with the fact that their team could lose billions of dollars overnight in value. So we'll never see it.
Ever. Not to mention, some owners might actually have to care whether their team wins or loses.
Right. Might have to buy players.
Could you imagine if the Guardians and all these baseball teams that aren't spending a dime had the thought of getting relegated so that the Nashville Sounds jump into the league?
Picard was truly heroic in the Nets. Seth Everett, top that next.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network.
22 minutes before the hour, and since it's a hump day, that means it's time for Seth Everett. Longtime friend of the show and friend with the both of us. Sports with Friends, Hall of Justice, Tech Stream, his three great podcasts, all very different from one another. He's a very versatile and talented guy, and we're very grateful that he took a liking to us 15 plus years ago. You can follow Seth on Twitter at Seth_Everett. How the heck are you?
With you.
And with you also. Oh, I didn't know that's how I was supposed to answer that. Your mic was cut off a little bit at the beginning, so I took a guess at what you said there.
Oh, may that be with you.
That's about what it sounded like.
Gotcha.
The late, great Daryl Hamilton used to have a line that used to cut out like that, and this was in the heat of the steroid hearings, and every time he would come back, the host, me, meaning me, I would hear a click, but the audience wouldn't hear it. So I knew when he was coming, and as soon as I heard the click, I would know to stop talking, and he would go, and those are the guys I know did steroids, and I'm not telling you again.
Well, Seth, last night we were talking about earlier in our starting five, Dusty Baker gets 2,000. I know you've known Dusty for a lot of years. Yeah. David and I both contend he should be a Hall of Famer. I'll start with that. Yeah. Do you?
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was great. Great moment. I thought amazing how many former players. Well, I guess the two things I learned is how many former players that I follow on social media and how many of them took to social media to congratulate him. He is a guy that players would take a bullet for. I mean, I know that's a cliche, but that's what it feels like. And I remember, you know, Darrell Hamilton played for Dusty with the San Francisco Giants in the early 2000s. And that's how I got to know Dusty. But when I met him, what I was amazed by was how many players swore by him. And I've told the story of years ago. I mean, now we're talking probably 5-6 years ago when Dusty got the Nationals job. Bryce Harper came on Sports with Friends. And when he found out that I knew, he found out from the PR person that I knew Dusty, he asked to pause the podcast and he wanted to know about him. What was the selling point of Dusty Baker? And it was a fascinating conversation because Bryce Harper and I bonded over that moment. And I've said it before, Dusty gave the eulogy at Darrell's memorial, and I'll never forget him for that. And for that, I'll always be bonded with him. I'm a massive, massive Dusty Baker fan.
Well, he's done a great job with the Astros. He's done a terrific job everywhere he's been. Goes. I mean, he took the Giants to within 10 outs of winning a World Series.
Cubs,
you know, he won a division title with the Reds.
Yeah.
You know, I took the Reds to the playoffs even. I mean, you know, he's gone to back-to-back LCSs now with the Astros. Remember, he took over the Astros. They were a punchline. They were a joke. And it was like, oh, man, who could handle this job? And people said, well, if anybody could, it's Dusty Baker. And now, you know, things have been calm. They went through it. They took their grief. They kept on playing. You know, they keep losing guys. They still keep winning. For the most part.
And I talked to Dusty when he took the Astros job, and he just said he was going to restore dignity to the team. It's all he wanted to do. That was his only goal, to just get some dignity back there.
Seth, you mentioned that guys would take a bullet for him, and we all get the cliche, but I want to know from the players that you've spoken to, from the locker rooms, clubhouses that you've been around when he was managing, that I'm sure you've been in, is there any singular thing as to why they would take a bullet for him? What is the style that makes him so endeared by all of the players that have played for him?
I think one of the things that Darrell used to say about Dusty that I remember is that he always understood your perspective, so that when it was a teaching moment, he would always make it be something where he would speak at the player's level. You know, to understand, you know, why a guy's doing something. And you know, sometimes he would challenge effort. And when he did, you know, it was almost like Jewish guilt. He never yelled. He was always one of the guys. He always wanted to know what people were into, what they were doing, what they were saying. And he's hysterical. He is hysterical. When Darrell left the radio show to take the job working for Bob Watson, meaning he was going to be part of the suspensions, you know, I've told that story to you guys before. I used to go down to the MLB commissioner's office and we would watch the footage and I would suggest games for suspension. Sometimes some of the suspensions were my doing. And we went into, I think it was a restaurant in Arizona during spring training. And Dusty gets up out of his seat when Darrell walks by and he says, "Uh-oh, CSI's here. CSI, let's get out of here. Everybody clear the building, He does that to endear himself to everybody. And I've never met a guy that doesn't love this dude. And it's apparent when I see what I saw last night was when he got the 2000th win, former players who just swear by the guy. What a great person.
Dusty Baker, the 12th manager in Major League Baseball history to win 2,000 games. He also had nearly 2,000 hits in his major league career. I compare
and invented
him.
Invented the high five.
He invented the high five?
Dusty Baker invented the high five. There's an ESPN 30 for 30 about it. Watch it.
I missed that. Very interesting. All righty then. But I compare Dusty Baker a lot in terms of his overall career. It was very Joe Torre-ish until the championships. Joe Torre was a good manager. He was a good manager in Atlanta. He was a pretty good manager in St. Louis. Yeah, the Angels weren't that great. But, you know, Joe Torre also was a very good player. Not a Hall of Fame player, although he had an MVP season. But he was a very good player. Dusty Baker was a very good player on a lot of teams that won. And now I will say, you know, there's a Cubs fan in our Twitch chat room who thinks that he was, you know, tough on Pryor and Wood, and that he's the reason that they blew out their arms. And,
sure,
you know, who knows?
Homer Bailey, he ruined Homer Bailey.
And so, you know, but between the Giants and the Cubs and
the Nationals
and the Reds,
were hiring their managers, I wanted Bud Black, just for the record.
Okay. But so anyway, we know that you have a relationship with Dusty. He achieved something last night. Great very night. Few have. We wanted to talk to you about it. Seth Everett, Sports with Friends Hall of Justice and TechStream. You can follow him on Twitter at Seth_Everett.
All right. I know where you are with the sport of baseball, but I'm just curious, when things like last night happen and something great happens, does it get you back at all, or does it just get you remembering what you loved most about the sport?
No, I don't think of it like one day I'm back and one day I'm not. I pay attention. I follow what's going on. And, you know, I watch, you know, what's been going on. You know, what I'm looking for, you know, to say whether I'm back or not, is it's more of, you know, there has to be a professional motivation to do it, but it also has to be, I have to see the evolution of the sport. You know, somebody on social media said that the Mets and Braves played a game in 2 hours and 10 minutes. And they said, see, it's back. And I said, okay, yeah, 1 out of 1,000. That's good. Okay, get me 10 more. You know, get me fast-paced games. The most egregious thing I've seen this season so far is the Clayton Kershaw. You know, you're 6 outs from a perfect game. You stay in the goddamn game, and that's ridiculous. And then the other one is the 5-guy no hitter from Friday night.
Right.
You know, when I think of a no hitter, I think of the attrition, the physical achievement. When 5 guys are no hitting, I think it's more about the other team's offense. It's not as special. It five people doing a no hitter. Okay, all it does is exacerbate the lack of offense. And Jason Stark was tweeting the other day, what is the major league average right now is 229.
Yeah, and I will say in April it was bad. And a little bit colder month than normal, the abbreviated spring training and all that. In the last week, batting average is up over 10 points. It's up like 12 to 15 points in the last week. So I'm going to give it the rest of the month to see whether or not that was the aberration and what it is that the guys are going to settle at. It's getting warmer. We're now at the point where guys, in theory, would have been in shape, hitters and pitchers, the whole deal. So... but yeah, there's no doubt. Offense has been down, and they think
strikeouts are still up.
Yes, they are. They think it's a combination. Also, the ball. You know, people complain that this year the ball's not going. Although, if you watch Judge and Stanton, that's kind of tough to hang your hat on that. Let me tell you.
And Seth, wow, just had a little bit of a brain cramp there. But wow.
His name is Luis Domingue.
Well, that's where we wanted to go. We wanted to go to the backup goalie who had played 2 games this year in the NHL.
Former Devil's great.
Devil's great. I can't.
Is there such a thing from this century?
When you heard his name, did you really remember and go, oh, wow, he played for the Devils?
Totally. And I Googled him, and I went and I texted my 13-year-old who had already gone to sleep for the night, and I texted her, and I said, hey, remember this guy? And I texted a picture of Luis Domingue in a Devil's uniform, and she said, yeah, what did he do? I said, you're not going to believe what he did. He got up, you know, and I told the whole story about how he came into the game in the middle of the first overtime and
second overtime.
Second overtime. And just an amazing feat. Just an amazing feat to not be able to miss a beat. The hockey playoffs are so stinking good.
Aren't they? And we're 48 hours into it. And the complete story, Rangers-Penguins starting goalie, mid-second overtime, hurt, takes himself out. The backup goalie's literally not even on the bench. He's sitting in the tunnel there, and he comes out, makes 17 saves. The guy played 2 games all year. He's 30 years old. He's best known for a cookbook.
I was going to joke that Midtown Comics is like 7 blocks north of the Garden. Maybe he was there.
Could have been.
And we told,
instead of game notes, maybe a comic book was what he had with that broccoli, the broccoli and spicy pork.
And that's the other part. If you don't know, literally in between the first and second overtimes, you know, he ate. I mean, the game started at 7.
So they had a pregame meal.
So you figure what time is that? 5?
Noon. No. I mean, the players have a pregame meal. They don't eat before the games. They might grab a snack. Typically, the players eat after practice. So they're the so they were the road team. They practiced at 11 o'clock in the morning.
So they ate at 1.
Say they 12:30, 1 o'clock.
Okay. And so there you go. And so now we're in between the first and second overtime. He hasn't eaten in 10 hours.
He doesn't think he's going to play.
No. So he has a big plate, he said, of spicy pork and broccoli. Right. And then about 15 minutes later, the starting goalie skates by him and goes, "You're in."
No, you can't see the light. That's former Devils great Luis Domingue.
For those of you watching on Twitch, Seth holding up his phone. But, all right, quickly, Sports with Friends, Hall of Justice text stream.
Sports with Friends is a fun one for if you're a basketball fan. Long time, 27-year trainer for the New York Knicks, Mike Saunders, joins us. Really fun conversation. He took over after the Willis Reed, Walt Frazier, Earl Monroe years, but he was with Bernard King and Bill Cartwright and Charles Oakley and Patrick Ewing and all those guys then all the way through Latrell Sprewell and the finals run there. Just a really fascinating conversation with Mike Saunders, former New York Knicks trainer.
Did you get into his, I believe it's Mike Saunders that has the Larry Bird story with the three-point shot contest?
We talked about it a little bit. He talked about his All-Star experiences. We went off on a lot of tangents, and so I'd heard that story, but he went into a lot of the All-Stars, and he talked about a lot of the players that he knew. He did a breakdown of Bernard King's knee. I found it fascinating, just the amount of preparation this guy needed to do just to get on the floor was pretty remarkable. Well, we talked about the change in the NBA and how different it is.
And very quickly, you know, when you blew out your knee in the mid-80s, all right, it's a very different deal than when you blow out your knee 35 years later. Very quickly, Hall of Justice.
Hall of Justice, we review Moon Knight. The finale comes out today. The podcast comes out tomorrow. And TechStream is all about air tags and how dangerous they are.
If you don't know the story, someone leaving Disney found an air tag in their bags, which means they were basically tracked around the park the whole day. That would scare the ever-living you-know-what out of anyone.
Yep.
Oh, that's like right out of a movie.
There's a model in New York City that had that happen too, and she went to her house, and it's crazy.
It's absolutely crazy.
All right. Good talking to you, buddy.
Shalom.
Seth Everett. Sports with Friends, Hall of Justice text stream. Follow him on Twitter at Seth_Everett. Joining us once again here on Miller and Moulton. You miss any of the show? Well, that's why you go to FloridaSportsNetwork.com and MillerandMoulton.com and download what you missed.
Not to mention all the usual places to find your podcasts. You can get Miller and Moulton at any of those as well. We have completed the show. For those of you in Lake City, Port Charlotte, and Tampa, the bonus hour in the Fort Myers market is next. We thank you so much for listening to Miller and Moulton right here, only on the Florida Sports Network.